It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we start with just bad news in baseball, unfortunately. Mike Trout is down for several weeks with a significant ligament injury in his thumb. And that's a big issue. It's a big issue for the Angels. It's a big issue for Mike Trout. And it's a big issue for fantasy owners. There are at least two questions here. And I think the first one is, if you have Trout, what are you doing? Are you just figuring, you're just hoping it's 8 weeks and you can fade that and you kind of continue managing your team like you have been? Do you make some kind of aggressive move? Just philosophically, Fred, if you've got Trout and you are not either running away in first or getting lapped in last, what's the sort of philosophical approach for a fantasy owner who has Trout right now?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a unique situation where, you know, almost without a doubt, the top fantasy player is out for probably a couple months, that if I own Trout, and for me it wouldn't really matter where I was in the standings, I would for sure float his name out for trade offers. I mean, it's just, to me, that's a sensible. I've seen people debating this on Twitter, and for me, there's no debate. Like, you at least make the rounds in your league and put it out there. I'm interested in trading Trout for, you know, a lesser player who can help me right now. Now, where that line is depends on the size of your league. If your league's shallow, then the line of what you would trade Trout for has to be higher because waiver is more plentiful than if you're in, say, a 15-team league, you would settle for less for Trout. But, I mean, I think you have to put it out there because there may be an optimistic owner in your league who's willing to overpay for him because they believe so much that they can withstand, you know, the time he's injured, or because maybe they're just a little too optimistic on the situation overall. We don't know if he's going to be back in 6 or 8 weeks. And then, I mean, we expect he'll be really good when he gets back, but we've talked about this before, and I know you're a big proponent of this. Like, this is a thumb injury for a hitter. Like, I know Mike Trout's amazing, but he's still human. Like, do we expect him to be 100% Mike Trout immediately when he returns?
That's the thing. I think the thing is, because of, you've got a couple things, and one is, again, just like you said, because of what you're dealing with, because of the nature of the injury, it's going to be tricky. Even for guys who heal well, I'm skeptical of how quick it comes back. And you know what the two things it's going to affect are? One, you know, if he shows effects when he comes back, one way is going to be power. And the other way is, I wonder if he's going to be hesitant to run quite as much when he comes out. I wonder if, because of this, he is going to be, he's going to hesitate to try to steal because he's to slide head first on a stolen base, and that's where that hand is. So I think those things are very much worth considering. But I think the other part of this is, you know, the Angels aren't very good. And their Angels lineup, and we'll talk about this in another context in a little bit, but the Angels lineup is, without Mike Trout, is just bad. And so, and their pitching staff is not great. So if you're the Angels, what's the rush? If you're the Angels and he's right on the cusp and maybe you'd be pushing it, what's the rush? I mean, I know you'd like to have him back. I know the fans want to have him back. I know this guy is a special player, but you've got him for a while still. And to me, it seems like you'd much, much rather take the extra week or two if it needs that than push him back, because it's just hard to see that see them being in the middle of a pennant race where having an 80% Mike Trout really tilts things. I would think if they're smart, they're going to wait until he's 100%. So, you know, the other part of this is, I think I'm going to be pretty conservative in how I look at these timetables, because I'm imagining the Angels are going to be pretty conservative.
No, I agree with that. I do think that Trout himself will probably drive maybe his return date a little more than the average player would, just because he's such a franchise player. And I thought this is the same with Matt, when Madison Bumgarner was injured, and he's already throwing where if Trout wants to push the envelope and get back as quickly as possible, maybe he wants to try to jump into the MVP discussion already, or maybe he's just a competitive guy and wants back in. I think he could sway them more than the average player, but you're right. If he's level-headed about it, like, it's highly unlikely, I think, that they're in the race when he's ready to return. And I think your stolen bases point is a good one, because Trout's a great hitter, but we don't expect him to lead the majors in batting average, and we don't expect him to lead the majors in home runs. So, and he's in a, as you said, he's in a not very good lineup. So if he's not stealing bases, like, he's still a very, very, very good fantasy player, but he may not be the top one if you know, if he's not stealing bases. So maybe someone will trade with you, hoping, if you're a Trout owner, expecting that they're going to get 100% Mike Trout from late July to the end of the season. And we have already mentioned several reasons why that's a risky proposition. So if I could trade him for a good outfielder, for example, and I said that bar depends on the league size, I'm quite willing to make that move.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. I think if I could get, and look, I don't know how exactly you do the math here, but however you do the math, if somebody would tell me that the guy I would get would be the equivalent to Mike Trout 100% full value from August 1st to the end of the year, I'm taking that deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not confident, for one reason or another, either conservative timetable or not the same when he comes back or any of those variables, I'm not convinced that we get 100% Mike Trout from August 1st to the end of the year. And so if somebody gives me whatever that equivalent is, I think it's the right move to make.
Yeah, I, as an example, in a 15-team league, I mean, I had the Trout owner float out to the league, you know, I'm taking offers. And I looked at my outfielders, and my top outfielders were Marcell Ozuna, Yoenis Cespedes, and Andrew Benintendi. And I thought, okay, am I going to offer one of them straight up for Trout? But it's a deep league. If I get rid of one of them, then I'm filling Trout's spot with, like, Curtis Granderson or Rajai Davis until Trout gets back, which is a huge drop-off from one of those good outfielders. So far, I haven't made the offer. I'm not sure that I would rather have 2 months of Trout and 2 months of Curtis Granderson rather than 4 months of Andrew Benintendi right now. I might just take the safe route and keep my team chugging along where they are.
Yep. We continue talking about the Angels, and we talked about Cameron Maben, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and talked about what he was contributing at the top of the lineup. He is still doing interesting things, and he's still an interesting player, and he's still a guy I like, but if Mike Trout isn't driving in Cameron Maben, then to me, the going forward value of Cameron Maben drops pretty significantly. Do you still have any significant interest in Maben right now?
Well, he's always injured. That's my big problem with Maben. And again, he's day-to-day right now. I guess he showed up at the ballpark with pain in his side. I was like, how do you show up with pain in your side? Like, were you playing Frisbee? Like, playing catch with a Frisbee or something before and you tweaked your side? I don't know. But that's my concern with him. Now, I did think, when I looked at the Angels lineup, my feeling was a bigger drop for Albert Pujols, who doesn't get to drive in Trout, and Cole Calhoun, who doesn't get to hit around him, because Calhoun isn't hitting well, but overall he doesn't do a lot on his own. Maben was the one where, like, obviously this will cost him runs scored. The only thing I thought, if he could stay healthy, maybe Mike Socha is more willing than ever to play small ball while Trout's out, and say to Maben, like, hey, if you get to first, like, green light's all yours. Whereas I could see him saying sometimes, you know, hey, we got Mike Trout up to bat. Like, we can't have you running into an out. So maybe the loss of runs could be offset by a few more steals, because steals are so valuable right now. But for the other players in that lineup, oh, especially Pujols, to me, like, I really felt like Trout has been propping up Pujols' RBI total now for a couple of years. So that's a loss for a couple months. It doesn't mean that you cut him or anything, but if you were teetering on that line of should I start him or not, or should I keep him or not, that would push me over.
Yeah, I mean, look, aside from RBI, Albert Pujols is just not having a real good year. I mean, I think that's the thing to sort of take a look at, is that, you know, look, he's Albert. He's the name is still there, but 254, 8 homers. He actually has a steal, 17 runs scored. If we're saying, and I think it's likely, that he's about to take a hit in RBI because he has 38 and 48 games, I don't see how that guy is a starting first baseman in mixed leagues without Trout.
That's right. He might still be in 15-team leagues, but anything shallower, he's not. And when I look on waivers in those 10-team leagues, you see guys like Logan Morrison and Justin Smoke and these guys who have actually hit quite well so far this season still sitting on waivers in a lot of shallow leagues. And, you know, I'd rather, I think, run with one of them now. The one thing with Pujols we could say is, well, he's going to get his 90 RBI or more just hitting behind Trout. And now that we can't say that for a couple months, I'd be willing to consider letting him go.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Dustin Pedroia, another name, another former MVP, and another guy who's not quite what he was. In the shallowest of leagues, are you thinking about dropping Pedroia? I mean, it depends on what's better, and I don't know necessarily what's sitting on the waiver wire that's better, but if you see something out there, you willing to drop Pedroia to get whoever the interesting guy is that happens to hit the waiver wire?
Yeah, I think that it really is an option. I have seen his ownership percentage fall a bit, and I can see where people are coming from in that Pedroia is obviously like a really good player, but he doesn't hit a lot of home runs, and he doesn't steal a lot of bases anymore. So he is a little bit lineup-dependent, and a lot of his value comes in hitting for high average and scoring a lot of runs. And the Red Sox haven't been as good on offense so far this year. And he doesn't rank among the top 25 or 30 second basemen so far this year. Now, he does, I think, in going forward value, but he hasn't been. So my one thought is, with there being so many injuries, if you're the guy who already owns Trout and, you know, a couple other injured players and your DL is full, and it's got to be bench space for Pedroia, and on a lot of leagues, shallower leagues, only have 3 or 4 man benches, then I think you have to consider cutting him. Like, if you're in a shallow league, you could cut him and just go with Devin Travis while he's hurt, and then reevaluate maybe when Pedroia comes back, and then use that extra spot, you know, for a healthy player, streaming pitchers, things like that. I think it might be something you need to consider.
The one thing I would say about Pedroia is I feel like even now he's a really high floor guy.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's not nothing. So, you know, if you are in a tight race and can't afford that risk, you know, if there is somebody having sort of a breakout season, you know, there is a risk-reward thing, because even now Pedroia has been decent, and it's not like he's bad. So I do think that to some extent it becomes a philosophical question of, are you willing to drop this guy to get this other guy given your circumstances, rather than just he's lousy? Because he's not. He's productive. He's just not special. And I think in some leagues that is worth remembering, that a nice high floor player is not nothing.
That's right. And my one other thought on Pedroia is, I'm not saying this is going to be 2017 for sure, but we have seen in the last few years of his career him go in some waves where he has these years where everything clicks, like last year, and he's really good, and then some other years where he deals with injuries and it doesn't really seem to click. And he's not terrible, but he's just okay. Like, he hits 280 and he scores a fair amount of runs, but he just hits a few home runs, steals a few bases, and the way home runs are piling up right now, like, that may not get it done if this is kind of one of those not so great years. I'm not saying for sure that's going to happen. I still have faith in the Red Sox lineup that it's going to be more productive, but it hasn't been so far.
Speaking of players that you are thinking about dropping, and these are guys that you almost certainly have dropped in 10-team leagues, but some guys having some rough years: Todd Frazier, Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber. The only one of those guys that I really would hesitate in a shallow enough league, the only guy where I would really worry about feeling dumb about it, is Addison Russell. And the reason for that is, I think he's a little less, he is less far off of our expectations, and the shape of his production is not that different from what you anticipated. Like, you drafted Addison Russell knowing that you might not get a great batting average from him. You drafted him hoping for power, for RBI, and he's you know, not on those, but he's not all that far off. So, you know, Russell's the one guy where I think you're sort of willing to ride this out in most cases, you know, unless there's something really special that you might pick up in his place. But, you know, he's the one guy that I think you're not just utterly shocked by what you're getting. The other two guys, shallow leagues, I don't see the case for holding on to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I look at their ownership percentages, like in Yahoo leagues, Todd Frazier's still 80% owned, and I think that's maybe some owners aren't paying attention or something, but like, that's to me too high. Frazier's to me is maybe, I don't know, I feel like Frazier's ceiling is higher than Russell's, just with what Frazier's done the past couple years with the power, like if he could come around. Schwarber's his own case to me, as far as in your league, if he's catcher eligible, you have to keep him. I mean, you deal with whatever in batting average if you've got a possible 25 homer catcher. But if he's outfield eligible, to me, has to go. And that even would be 12-team leagues, because there are plenty of good outfielders out there. 12-team leagues, I'm probably holding, you know, Frazier and Russell at least on my bench. But 10-team leagues, I agree, I think they have to go. And I think this is the time, like, this is June 1st. I think this is the time it's okay to give up on someone maybe you took in the first half of your draft. You've given them 2 months. I hate sitting on my hands all season and then seeing my team just kind of slowly go down the drain. And that's one thing that bad hitters, like unproductive hitters, will do to a team. With pitchers, we kind of see them, they kind of get blown up, and then you just run away. With hitters, they just kind of slowly underachieve and pull your team down, and it's hard to decide when to make the move. So I kind of wanted to mention that today, that I think some owners should look at that move now.
The thing with Frazier, to me, and this is something you've talked about, is that he wasn't that great in the second half of last year. Mm-hmm. He hit 15 home runs after the break, but he hit 225 on the year last year. He did hit 40 home runs, but 25 of those were before the break. So, you know, it's been a while since Todd Frazier was the guy that I think, you know, you put your rose-colored glasses on and you think about what you might be getting when you draft Todd Frazier. It's been a while since he was that guy. I mean, I think even with the 40 home runs last year, you might argue that it's been 2015 since he was the kind of complete fantasy player that you would hope he would be when he hit for a decent average and hit for power. So, he's 31. I understand the idea that the upside on Frazier is higher because he's a guy who hit 40 home runs a year ago, but I also find it harder to think that he reaches that ceiling than either of the other two guys.
Yeah, and the downside of Frazier is tremendously low in that he's really evolved into this batter who lofts like a ton of fly balls. He pulls the ball a lot. Like he's not really hitting the ball that hard on a regular basis, so he's kind of just playing off like these pulled kind of lofted home runs, and when he's not getting them, then he's really not doing anything because those are easy outs. So he's not even like a guy who really crushes the ball, and that's why he hit all the home runs. So you're saying, oh well, if they're not going over the fence, they're probably still doubles and finding gaps and everything. Like, he's evolved into quite the all-or-nothing fantasy producer.
I really like both Scott Schebler and Adam Duvall. I don't like them quite as much outside fantasy because neither one is exactly an on-base machine. But I really like both these guys in fantasy. I like the ballpark. I like the combination of them. You know, I think that to some extent when you've got that kind of power in the heart of an order, it feeds off of each other. I'm pretty much hold to buy on both of these guys. Why should I tell me why I should be more concerned than I am about them?
No, I think you're right about hold to buy. If I own them, I'm keeping them, and if I don't and I need power, I think these are the types of players who are interesting targets. I can't understand why Schebler hasn't been getting more buzz. I mean, like everything makes sense here. He's got a hitter-friendly home park. He puts a lot of balls into the air. He's hitting a lot of home runs. You know, he hasn't even had like really good, really high BABIP or something like this year. Like I feel like he's pretty legit as a kind of one-dimensional home run type hitter. And he's owned, for example, in Yahoo leagues, his ownership percentage is a good 20-25% less than guys like Frazier and Russell. And Schebler's producing, like he needs to be owned. And for owners who are out there looking for power, I know it, the safe thing to do is just say like, oh, I'm going to go trade for Josh Donaldson, J.D. Martinez, Bryce Harper, like these star-type power hitters. Well, you can trade for Scott Schebler for a lot less, and you may get a similar home run total. You may not get a similar everything else, but giving up your number five starter for Scott Schebler may be a lot smarter than giving up your ace for Josh Donaldson.
Right. Trey Turner has been showing signs of life here in the past couple of weeks. Still, his overall numbers are not good, but over the last 12 days or so, there have been things to like. He has been running aggressively. He's getting base hits. I am still, even now, not really worried about Turner. I think we should probably reassess our overall assessment and not say that the guy who was just so otherworldly late last year is the reality, because we should have been probably more hesitant about that coming in. But I'm really not worried about Turner. I see him maybe as a buy low, though it might be getting to be a little too late for him. Where are you on Turner right now?
Yeah, I think there is still that buy low window. I'd say I'm not super concerned, like maybe a little bit. Like we definitely aren't seeing growth as far as his plate discipline is
That's the concern for sure.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's improved there, and I was hoping maybe we'd see some improvement there. His numbers are okay, but like the people who look, when you dig a little deeper, if you take out that one series at Coors Field a while ago, they do look pretty bad other than that, but that is a way that you can make a case to a Turner owner, who probably is aware of that, to buy low on him. I think someone asked me in one of my leagues for J.D. Martinez for Turner, and I haven't pulled the trigger on that, and I've been kind of sitting on it's an OBP league, which makes Turner not quite as valuable as he would be in a batting average league, and I've been sitting on that one and not quite willing to do it, but I do think that's maybe where the buy low window is right now. Like Martinez, who's healthy now and playing well, like is probably more of a third, fourth round type player, and Turner was a first or second round player in most drafts. So I think that's where his value's fallen to, and I think for owners who need steals, this might be a time where you could get him for your fourth round pick.
Jonathan Villar is not, you know, he really, I think there was a lot of hope that things were better than they looked in the overall numbers with VR, but his May numbers are really no better than his April numbers. A couple extra steals, fewer homers, fewer RBI, batting average still down in the dreadful area. Is it time to start? I mean, it's a weird profile because he does still have 24 RBI and 26 runs, so he's not killing you across the board. Is it time to reassess VR a little like we were just talking about Turner, that maybe he's not the guy we thought off of last year? And if so, where would you want to be on a trade of VR?
Yeah, I mean, like VR, we talk sometimes about hitters who are better in real life than they are in fantasy, and VR may be the exact opposite as far as, like, because he can hit home runs and steal so many bases, he's so valuable in fantasy, but is clearly not that valuable to the Brewers because he's not getting on base, he's striking out a ton. They've moved him down the lineup. So I think if you own VR, I think you have to hold because that dropping him in the lineup was kind of a big story, and I'm not sure if you can get enough value from him. For someone who does steal a lot of bases, like he does still have that value, and maybe there's a buy low opportunity right now, but the discount has to be, for example, the discount on VR I think has to be bigger than the discount on Turner. I was talking maybe a couple rounds, right, when I was kind of referencing Turner, maybe your fourth round pick for Turner. I think if VR was, say, a third round pick in your league, like I'm not giving my fifth or sixth round pick for him. But if I need steals and we're talking about me giving my 10th round pick for VR, I think who's maybe having a decent season, then I think I'm willing to engage that discussion and then cross my fingers that he gets back up in the lineup at some point, or just that he settles in hitting sixth or seventh and continues to steal bases a lot.
Buster Posey is having a really weird year. 7 homers, 13 RBI. You know, in some other ways, very much the things that we always like about Buster Posey. I mean, he's hitting .348, but also only 21 runs. It's a weird combination. He is striking out pretty much not at all and walking like he ever has. I mean, he's really, you know, kind of the opposite of what we were just saying about VR. From the perspective of just value, he's been an enormously valuable baseball player. And yet, again, 21 runs, 13 RBI for a guy with .348 average and 7 homers, I kind of don't know what to do about that. Which of those, I think the question is, which part of that do you think levels out? Do you think that the guy on pace to hit .340 and 20 home runs comes back to earth and he instead he hits .310 with 15 to 18 home runs? Or do you think that the 13 RBI and 21 runs balance out to meet the batting average and home runs?
Yeah, I think it all balances out. In the end, when it all balances out, he will be more valuable than he has been so far. So, yeah, if he could hit .315, .320 the rest of the way, you know, continue on a 20-ish home run pace, maybe or something like that. I know the Giants lineup isn't very good and that they're one of the weaker lineups in baseball, but even a hitter in a bad lineup who's getting on base like nearly 45% of the time from the heart of the lineup has to score runs at a higher rate than he has. And someone who's hitting for average and power the way he has to drive in more. He's only driven in 6 people this year who aren't himself. Like that RBI stat's my favorite one becoming my favorite one to follow on a daily basis in the box scores because it just boggles my mind. But I think there's a buy low opportunity here where maybe some Posey owners are feeling like, you know, this lineup's so bad around him that he just can't be awesome this year. And I engaged another owner in discussion. I said, would you rather have Posey or Salvador Perez? And Salvador Perez has been hitting for more power, many more RBIs. I would still much rather have Posey for the rest of the season. The other owner agreed with me on that, unfortunately. But it was a discussion worth having because I think some Posey owners will probably be quite concerned about that low RBI total.
If I give you what would be basically his typical paces on the counting stats for the rest of the year, so two-thirds of the season, if I tell you the rest of the year Posey gives you 10 more homers, 60 more RBI, and 50 more runs, over or under that?
I'd say the homers at 10, I'm going to go maybe even just a little bit over. I'd say maybe 12 or 13. The RBI might go maybe just a little bit under, just maybe or around there. And the runs, I'd say I'm probably bang on. Like, I think I would project him, yeah, to be about an 80 RBI pace for the rest of the season and maybe a 70-run or 75-run pace for the rest of the season and a 20-homer pace for the rest of the season and divide that out, I would be pretty comfortable with that, which isn't far off how I viewed him going into the season. I do accept that Giants lineup, I think, is going to continue to be fairly unproductive, but like even in an unproductive lineup, he should be producing more than this.
We move to starting pitchers. Danny Duffy goes on the DL with an oblique injury, which can be tricky for any baseball player, but I think in particular tricky for starting pitchers. Can you drop him?
Yeah, I think he fits into the Pedroia conversation as far as shallow league. You already have several injured players. He's been inconsistent. You know, he's a good pitcher, but he's not an ace. Or he hasn't shown to be an ace yet. In those scenarios, I think you could consider dropping him. And we don't know about how long Pedroia will be out. We know Duffy's going to be out a while. So I don't know if I'm waiting 6 weeks or even 2 months to get back like maybe like a number three type starter in a 10-team league. His whip was fairly high this year all along, even before that really bad final start. So I'm willing to consider dropping him if I already have injury problems. I'm not in a position where I'm definitely dropping him, but my mind's open to it. Would you consider it in a shallow league?
I'd consider it for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I think, you know, again, as always, especially as we get deeper into the year, it's a question of what's out there in your league, but I think I'd consider it.
Mm-hmm. By the time he gets back, the Royals could be a depleted club, too, if they decide to become sellers.
Danny Salazar moved to the bullpen despite a ridiculous strikeout rate. Another one of those just weird, hard-to-figure seasons. How deep a league is it before you're holding on to Danny Salazar?
Yeah, I think 15-team league, I'm going to hold him for a couple weeks and at least just see where this all goes. I mean, we saw that before with Trevor Bauer, not that he's been a superstar by any stretch in the rotation, but where he was sent to the bullpen and we said, well, you can forget about Trevor Bauer, and then he was back in the rotation because they needed him in not too long. So I think in a 15-team league, I'm going to hold him for a while. In a 12-team league, I'm off. I'd rather just pick up a hot starter and see where it goes because to have value for you, Salazar first has to pitch well in the bullpen, second has to get a chance to go back in the rotation, and then third has to pitch well in the rotation. And I don't feel like the odds are high that all three of those things happen. Would you cut him in a 12-team league?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably so. Robbie Ray, a guy that I've been skeptical on. I was probably one of the last people to come around on him. Now has 84 strikeouts in 69 innings, a 3.00 ERA. I'm still not sure I'm looking to trade for him, but he's got to be a must-start everywhere except maybe Denver right now, right?
Yeah, he's for sure a must-start. And I mean, he's as hot as any pitcher in his last three starts. But overall this season, when I look at his other numbers, like, I don't see a lot of difference. His strikeout rate basically is what it was last year. His walk rate basically is what it was last year. The BABIP's dropped almost 100 points, and that explains his whip dropping a lot. But when that corrects itself, at least even to meet in the middle, then he's not a low whip pitcher. Like, he's probably in the 1.2 somewhere, and then his ERA probably spikes up into the mid or high threes. So, I do think that Ray could be overrated. I mean, prior to those last three starts, he was not looking like a very valuable fantasy pitcher this year, even with the high strikeout rate. So I would go after – actually, I probably wouldn't because I think his owner probably overvalues him right now. I would consider Ray if I needed strikeouts. I think he's a guy who's become a really, really safe source of strikeouts. But I don't expect to see this current 1.10 whip at the end of the season.
How highly do you currently have Lance McCullers ranked among starting pitchers? Just here to end of the year, if you're doing a redraft, how high would he rank for you among starting pitchers?
Yeah, I think he's outside my top 15, which probably makes me a little lower on him than some other people. I'm not totally sold that McCullers is going to make 30 starts this year. I think this is a trap we can get in. Like, going into the season, I think the profile on McCullers was he's really good, and we're worried about his durability. And I don't, I mean, maybe he's proven that he's really good part a little more already, but 11 starts isn't enough to make me not worried about his durability. The Astros might run away with their division, in which case they could handle him with kid gloves. I mean, he hasn't thrown more than 125 and two-thirds innings in a major league season yet. I can't put him in the top 15 starters because of those concerns, although I'll say on a per-start basis, he might be in there for me. Do you think I'm too pessimistic on him?
So I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, but I understand the point. And the point is that we were worried about him staying healthy, and 2 months doesn't mean he's going to stay healthy. You know, I think the thing that I would keep in mind about McCullers is that by doing this even for two more months, I do think that he's sort of given us a little more confidence that he is really good. We can say we knew, we believed he was really good, we liked the ability, but, you know, he had 200 innings coming into this year, 206 innings. So, you know, adding 30% more innings at a really high level, I think, is valuable information in a way that 2 good months from an experienced pitcher would not be. So I do like him a little more because every time we get more innings from a young pitcher, I'm more confident that he is the guy we hoped he would be. But I still think I understand the continuing concern regarding his health, and I wouldn't give up too much. But, boy, if somebody else was worried about him staying healthy and you needed a really high upside pitcher, I think he's a guy you'd want to look at.
Yeah, I can see a value for McCullers on the trade market, and this is what I see. If you're an owner whose pitching staff needs a shot in the arm and you can't afford to pay for Max Scherzer or Chris Sale, McCullers is the guy you trade for at a lesser cost, and you just cross your fingers that you get 20 more starts out of him because you could, and he could compete for that Cy Young, and your pitching staff's not doing well, and you need to take a chance on someone, then, like I said, you trade for him and just cross your fingers and see what happens. Because it's also benefiting him, or it will, and it should continue to, that he's pitching on such a good team with a good bullpen and a good lineup. This is someone who, if everything holds together, could win 18 games or something like that this year. So there is a value, I think, with that right now. And he also could be on a lot of teams that have really nice pitching staffs because he wasn't drafted as a number one or even a number two starter in a lot of leagues. So there may be some McCullers owners who will say, I can afford to part with him.
Matt Harvey was pretty good his last time out. I think the most notable thing was that he had fewer than 3 walks for the first time since April 21st and had fewer than 3 walks and more strikeouts than walks for the first time since April 16th and the 4th time all year. So, you know, there are encouraging signs from Harvey. I am still extraordinarily hesitant. I am not sure I would pick him up off waivers even in a really shallow league, depending on what I had. I've just, the walks just terrify me. The strikeout rate has been better lately. You know, you look at his last 4 starts, and it's 21 strikeouts and 21 innings. I like that, but the walks have just been so high that it makes me nervous. Does one good start give you more optimism about Harvey, or is it still show me?
Yeah, I mean, it would have given me more optimism if it was against the Nationals or the Rockies or something like that. But his last 2 starts, which have been both wins and, like you said, a little bit better, have been home against the Padres and at the Pirates. And those are 2 of the easier matchups in baseball for a pitcher right now. I agree with you that I don't think I would pick him up. And I mentioned this in our notes to you, and I was interested. You did say something I thought smart about Harvey in spring training, where you said you could see him potentially getting off to a slow start and then finding his form, which this would maybe be the finding his form time. That being said, I was going to guess that the slow start has been even slower than you would have anticipated, and that's why you're not rushing out to pick him up.
Yeah, and again, it's just the walks are really concerning to me because that's never the pitcher he was. You know, the thing about Harvey and the thing, he was a guy just personally, I just absolutely love to watch pitch. Aside from Syndergaard, probably my favorite pitcher to watch pitch in recent years when he was good, and it was because of that combination of stuff and location. His he didn't just have control. He had exceptional command. And the fact that he's having such a hard time throwing strikes is really disconcerting to me. You know, if he were just down on velocity and not overpowering guys, you kind of figure maybe he can work with that. But if he also is giving away so many free base runners, that definitely makes me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk closers in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Last week, they chatted with Twins scouting director Sean Johnson about his team's decision for the number one pick in the upcoming MLB draft and compared new White Sox signee Luis Robert to his countryman and possible future teammate Yoan Moncada. Search for MLB Pipeline in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts and click subscribe. And this is really these guys' glory moment. The draft is approaching rapidly. It's pretty rare that draftees make a fantasy impact in the same year, but that's not the only thing they're talking about. They certainly still have fantasy implications for some of these guys they talk about. And again, I say this every time we do this, but it's because it's always true. There is simply nobody better, and I would argue nobody as good in the business of talking prospects as Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. It's fantastic that we have them both on our roster.
I totally agree. And this is the time of year where we're going past that Super 2 deadline for prospects.
Yep.
We should see in June some of these really good prospects coming up to the majors and maybe some that we weren't anticipating. So these are our gentlemen to listen to their podcast, to follow them on Twitter, to get that instant analysis when it happens so that, you know, owners can pick the right ones and avoid maybe the wrong ones.
Not a lot of closer talk this week. Started looking like Brad Hand was maybe the guy in San Diego. Then Brandon Maurer gets a save. In what circumstances are you looking to pick up either of those guys, or do you need to see something sure from either of them before you pick up either one?
Yeah, I was kind of excited about Hand when he was getting the chance.
Yep.
I do think he's a better pitcher than Maurer, and then now they've gone back to Maurer. So, but Hand will continue to work high-leverage innings. In a 10-team league, I think I'm out on the whole thing. In a 12-team league, if I owned one, I think maybe I'd hold on him for now, but I wouldn't cut someone that I liked, you know, to pick one of these guys up. In a 15-team league, if I have one, I'm happy, and I'll just kind of keep them and see what happens. But, I mean, it doesn't help that the Padres, now they have generated a lot of safe chances in about the last 7 to 10 days, but I don't think that's sustainable. So, I don't know. I don't trust Maurer enough to really want to own him in a mixed league, and I, with them going back to Maurer after, Hand got a couple saves. He didn't actually look great doing it, so maybe he kind of had his chance, and if Maurer holds it, then like holds it together for a few weeks, it'll still be him. I think Hand's also a trade candidate this summer, so mostly I'm an avoid on this one.
I also tend to have more faith in fringy right-handed closers than fringy left-handed closers, because whether it makes sense or not, managers prefer to have right-handers close, so if a guy is on the borderline, I tend to be a little more skeptical about a tentatively installed left-hander keeping his job in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Actually, on the topic of left-handers, this wasn't in our notes, that Tony Watson has been shaky of late, and they may go from left-hander to left-hander. I think Felipe Rivero is an interesting stash, at least in 15-team leagues for now, because Daniel Hudson hasn't pitched well overall this year. I think that, I know I'm pulling that one out of the blue, but since you mentioned the lefties, I think Pittsburgh could be one of those rare teams that actually could go from a lefty to a lefty and just move the lefty back into his old setup role. I think maybe it is go time on picking up Rivero and just hold him for at least a week and see what happens.
They are one of the least conventional wisdom teams in baseball, so I would not expect them to sort of fall into a rut. And, I love Rivero. He's easily my favorite pitcher in that bullpen. So if he had the opportunity, he is a guy you would very much want. And I often think about how much the Nationals might wish they had him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Santiago Casilla, Raisel Iglesias both seem to be the guys in their respective situations now. I like these guys both well enough. I would have some faith in both of them going forward. I mean, the thing with Casilla is he could certainly end up as an eighth inning guy somewhere else. I don't think that's going to happen with Iglesias. And I think if we're picking between them, that would tilt it for Iglesias for me. But I basically think these guys are both the guys to go to with their clubs for the rest of the year, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. I think they should be in 10-team league lineups right now. And you're right. If we had the option between them, or if we felt better about one of them, I agree. I feel better about Iglesias. I think he's a better pitcher. As you mentioned, he's less likely to be traded. His strikeout rate should be higher throughout the rest of the season. So, but I mean, they both pitch on clubs that probably won't win a ton of games the rest of the year, but enough to generate some save chances. I think Iglesias will stick in 10-team league lineups all year. Casilla might, but it will have to see through the trade deadline. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Casilla have some stinkers at some point and lose his job. I would be surprised if that happened to Iglesias. And it also goes back to your point. These are two teams who firmly said, close your committee at the start of the season.
Yep.
And you usually scoff at that notion. And sure enough, I believe there is not another pitcher on either team with two saves.
Big league managers really don't like having to answer that question.
They held it for about 2 weeks. There was about 2 weeks where each of those teams had, you know, three guys with a save, and then it started to emerge. Yeah.
We move to the two start pitchers. I'm not crazy about this list, but we'll take a look at him anyway. Eddie Butler at home against the Marlins and Rockies. Dan Straley at Wrigley and at Pittsburgh. Junior Guerra, home for the Giants and at the D-backs. Sean Manaea, home for Toronto and at Tampa Bay. Zach Godley, home for San Diego and Milwaukee. Hector Santiago at Seattle and at San Francisco. A lot of thoughts on this. I don't like the pitcher Santiago, which is a shame because I love the matchups. I like Godley well enough. I'm not crazy about him at home, but neither of those is a killer matchup. I think the one I may like most is Straley. Even going to Wrigley, he's done some things to like. I really like the at Pittsburgh, and I like the Manaea matchups pretty well, too. The Blue Jays, as we've talked about, and they're coming on, but they're still not exactly what they were, and home is a good place to pitch. And I know the Rays are hitting home runs, but that's also a pretty good place to pitch. So I feel like a lot of guys that I kind of like, nobody I love, nobody I really hate. Anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, I actually like this list a fair amount. I'm becoming a big Dan Straley fan, similar to how I'm a big Marco Estrada fan. I feel like he's the poor man's Estrada, where his strikeout rate's pretty solid now. He gets a lot of fly balls. He gives up the occasional home run, but a lot of those fly balls are out, so he keeps his whip down, which is nice. So I would use him in most leagues. I agree with you on Godley. I'd use him in most leagues. I'd use Manaea in most leagues. I don't mind Junior Guerra. That first start at home against the Giants is so appealing. And Guerra's pitched well in his first two starts back that I think I'll stomach the at Arizona to get the home San Fran. And I could see, at least in a 15-team league for Eddie Butler. I know he's been really up and down since he joined the Cubs rotation, but they're the defending World Series champs. They're largely healthy. I have a hard time not using one of their starters for two home starts.
I think it's a fair point. I'm just not really big on Butler still.
No, so. I agree. I can understand that for sure. I would hate to miss out on possibly two. I feel like you could win two games starting two home games.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he could get 15 runs behind it. I mean, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk, and thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.